Welcome back to the Rise and Scribe podcast. Joining me today is Jason Conception. You guys probably know him as Network. He's the Talking Corgi on Twitter. He's also hugely funny and a terrific writer. He writes for Grantland. He's written for a ton of other places before that, too. Hope you guys enjoy.
You're an interesting, I guess, test case. I don't know if that's the right word, insofar as kind of how you grew in your writing. I mean, well, when I first, I guess, learned of you, I basically just thought you were a hyper-intelligent corgi that could somehow, like, make puns on Twitter. And it turns out you're an actual person. You basically grew from Twitter, is that right?
That is, I would say that is accurate. I mean, I started my Twitter account essentially to follow my fantasy basketball team better, you know? I started following different beat reporters, whoever had Twitter accounts, and kind of hooked into, like, this fetal basketball Twitter. Like, it was around, I guess, 2008 or so, just so I could, you know, more accurately update my team. And the people, like, who I really gravitated to at that time were, like, all the slam guys, like Russ and Miles and stuff like that. They were just hilarious. So I started kind of tweeting back and forth with them, and just kind of, that's how I started my Twitter account. It just kind of grew from there. I really had no, there was nothing, like, planned about it, really.
Was the avatar always the Winston?
Milton. For a time, it might have been something else early on, but yeah, it's been
interesting. So it's been just, like, different iterations and variations of them?
Yeah.
At what point was it, did you start writing and kind of not only just, like, you know, writing on your own, I know you did some stuff for Destination, but, like, take it seriously and maybe, like, try and make it an actual thing for you?
It's a good question. I think that I wrote a blog post, like, around on Tumblr, like, right around when LeBron went to Miami for the first time, like, you know, the decision. And that was fun, but I really didn't think anything about it. And then Ziller asked me to do something for SB, so I did a couple things, just see if I could do it, and did a couple more essays for, like, some other people. And then, you know, I guess I'm not awful at it, so I just continued doing it.
Was it hard for you to kind of carry over, like, that, the persona that you cultivated on Twitter? Because, I mean, you're hilarious on there. Like, you're a must-follow. Was it hard to carry that over into writing? Because, I mean, writing funny is fucking hard.
Thanks, man. It is hard because, I mean, that was when I first started writing stuff. When people first started asking me to write stuff, that was the thing I struggled with. It's like, it's kind of easier to be funny in these, like, little blasts. But, like, over the course of, like, 800 to 1200 to whatever words, it's like, it's not always there. And so that was, like, one of the things that, and it's kind of a thing that I still think about, is like, well, I don't always have to just try and go for, I'm not always just trying to be funny at any given time, but sometimes things are just funny.
Right.
So they call for it.
Was there, like, did you have to catch yourself in terms of, like, I'm explaining this one too hard, or, like, I'm trying too hard for the joke, and just, like, it needs to come naturally?
In long form or, like, on Twitter?
Both, actually.
Well, Twitter is great because you know right away, like, if people think it's funny. Like, so it kind of, like, evolved into, I think I saw that old woman called Twitter batting practice. I think that's pretty accurate. Like, that's essentially, like, I'll use it for batting practice. you know, things that, you know, I'll come up with, like, watching a game or whatever. You just put it out there, and then if there's anything to that, you know, I'll throw it in a piece. Somehow I'll expand on it somehow.
Yeah, I saw you do that when you were on, not even with a joke, it was when Paul George went down, and you kind of just tweeted out about, you know, Arsenal's player, and then from there, like, the next day, you wrote an entire piece on it.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, I kind of have like worked that into how I write, I guess, you know, being as like, I really didn't have any background in writing proper before, you know, I never actually planned on becoming like a writer. So I love reading and I love reading cool writing. So I guess, you know, that has been helpful to me in my life. But, yeah, so that's like my kind of, I guess you'd call it my process, I guess, especially during the season, you know, if I see something and it helps, it's like better than taking notes sometimes because you remember.
Yeah.
Like, specifically when and what happened and there's a time frame and, you know, you can see what other people are, if the other people like had the same idea. So that's kind of like how I do it.
So if you never really, I guess, set out originally to be a writer, like when was the point where you're just kind of like, I kind of want to do this full time, or this is the thing I can do.
When people started asking me if I wanted to do it, that was really the point. Yeah, it's kind of weird because, you know, I don't know, for me, writing is like this tension between, like you have an idea and then you have to kind of like think of yourself that this idea is cool enough that other people should pay attention to it. With Twitter, it's easy to just be like, you can also do that in a, like a self-effacing way, you know, like, oh, this is stupid, but let's put it out there in a way that, I'm recognizing it, it's stupid, but, you know, I'll just throw it out there. With writing, you have to expand on those ideas. So it's kind of like a weird thing. Well, I have to, a lot of times I'm not even sure what is a dumb idea, you know, until I like really like, oh, this is too stupid to even really write about, isn't it? And that's like a thing I struggle with still. It's like, is this idea really just too stupid? Like to write about, like a lot of my first pitches to people were like, hey, this is like, seems like a really dumb idea. But what about this?
You said you still struggle with it. Is it like insofar as you think the idea itself is stupid or like you just think people won't pay attention to it?
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. The idea is like, I did one, like a thing about when Phil Jackson first heard that he was name dropped on the Kendrick Lamar mixtape. And, I mean, so I wrote like this kind of like fanfic thing about Phil Jackson's assistant comes into his like teepee, you know, on the banks of like the lake and like tells him about it. And that like sounds like a really stupid idea. That's still it's kind of like a dumb idea, but it's like, you know, how do you, if someone else is like, no, I think that's okay, then I'll do it. Otherwise, you know, I just come up with so many stupid ideas like all day.
Does it still kind of surprise you that people like that you're now being paid full time to write like stupid things, but like good things, but also things that are like, it's a little ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, totally. You know, like, especially when my Twitter account first really started to take off, like when I got to like 1,000 followers and some of them were like, you know, writers that I have read. I was like, okay, this is kind of weird. And the way I dealt with it was just to not, just pretend it didn't happen. You know, it's like to disconnect from it. Like I am just blasting these things out and there's like really no one out there reading it. And in a sense, it's kind of still what I do, you know, when I write something. Because it's, you know, that's what works for me. Otherwise, like, I'll become, like, frozen by, oh, my God, what the hell? People are going to read this.
So is your mindset then one of, like, you're just writing for yourself then?
Yeah, I mean, I write for myself. I write for the people who edit me. You know, pretty much, you know, just like what I think about stuff and not try to worry too much about like who's going to read it.
Right. Well, I know
my editors.
Well, cause like, I know like audience is always a concern, but there's always kind of a writerly thing that like we always want to do is that, you know, showing off, like not just to the reader, but also to other writers. And like some people have that, some people don't have that need. It sounds like you just kind of like, you know, whatever, I think this is fun. I think this is a cool thing. I want to write it. And you know, I don't.
Well, I think that does, I think that is a thing. You know, I think that I'd be surprised if like there was any writer that didn't want their peers to think that they're good, you know? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, it's interesting because, like, I came from, like, a music background, and in music, when you start to learn, like, all the scales, all the forms, all the modes, like, all the chords, there's this tendency, especially, like, for younger musicians to just be like, well, I need to prove every second that I know all this stuff, you know what I mean? Like, if I don't play something really amazing all the time that's, like, totally complex and very technical, then people are going to think that I don't know what I'm doing. And I think that's, like, a thing that – that's also a thing. Like, I try not to do that, like, in writing. Like, just say whatever thing, even if you think it's, like, stupid, if that's the way you – want to say it, you know, make it sound cool, but also like not try to muddy it up by like proving that you've read everything that, you know, people, cool intellectual people think people should have read, you know. So I like try to, like, if I drop a reference or whatever, I tried never to I've always liked it when people drop references that I don't understand, because it makes me, like, go out and try and figure stuff out. So I try to just be natural about, like, about the way I, you know, structure my prose, I guess. You know, and not be like, oh, man, I hope people really like this one. Hopefully, you know, they like the way I said this one. You know, just let it flow as natural as you can without worrying too much that people are going to think you're an idiot.
Yeah. Since you didn't come from, I guess, a writing background, I mean, a lot of us haven't, was there any part of writing, once you really started to get into it and did longer pieces, that was a struggle for you or something that you kind of had to, like, really work at or learn?
Yeah, I mean, I have multiple grammar websites on Bookmark. You know what I mean? Like, that first thing I wrote on Tumblr, somebody messaged me and said, hey, this is good, but I forget exactly what it was, but like some grammatical thing. I was like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. So it's like, you know, in a sense, it's like you're you know, yeah, having to like learn the rules, you know. And like the thing for music is that one of the things I realized, like playing jazz and like learning music, is like the rules are important to know, primarily because then you know when to break the rules. Like, yep. When is the appropriate time to not do the thing that the rules say always to do. So, yeah, I'm constantly checking up on the rules of grammar. Like, is this correct? What am I doing here? Like, does this even make sense? Like, and kind of prizing clarity over everything, but also trying to do things the way I kind of process them in my head. Whether that works like grammatically, and then just trying to make it so that it's clear and works grammatically.
That's really interesting what you said, and I completely agree. It's one of the things I've always kind of held true about writing is that, like, writing is all about learning the rules and then learning new ways to break them, but in a way that it still works.
I mean, I think that's how people develop, you know, their own voices. You know, it's like Cormac McCarthy doesn't use punctuation, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't use, like, all the punctuation available to him. But
yeah,
he's a genius, you know what I mean? So it's that kind of thing. And I don't mean to, like, think that I can do that, but at the same time, it's really interesting that, like, here's a guy who is obviously so technically and artistically able, and he just made a decision, you know, from an expression standpoint, I'm not going to use semicolons or quotation marks. And it works for him, you know.
Yeah, but I wonder if it's like, yeah, we all think like it's a really like cool and crazy thing to do, but I wonder if it's just because he sucked at apostrophes and like punctuation. It's just
there are times when I'm like still confused by semicolons, to be honest. So I think it's like, in that way, I think it makes sense, but I also, I don't know. Like, why does that work? It doesn't, I don't know why that works.
No, I don't know either. I remember one time I was working on this piece. It was a long time ago, and I had James Herbert, now at CBS, kind of help me out with it. And he was pointing out a few places where I had, like, my apostrophes wrong. And I told him, I was like, look, apostrophes are my weak point. Like, I suck at them. And he's like, well, you could just not use them. You could just call yourself the Cormac McCarthy of basketball. People will think you're really arrogant, but really it's because you suck with apostrophes. And I was like, that's brilliant. I might just do that now.
You could put, like, a space between the S and the Y. You could do, like, a word, space, S. No apostrophe.
I might do that now. I think that's going to be my style now. And then when it's like, when it needs to be like S apostrophe, I think I'll just put like a double space in between then.
Right.
Yeah. No, this is going to work great. Now, like, since you're with Grantland now, I mean, you get to expand beyond just writing about basketball. I mean, you get to write about movies, you get to write comic books. Basically, like, if you have an opinion on something, you get to write it. This is kind of going back to what I already asked you, but is that a little surreal for you that now you're like, I get to write about comic books for a living?
That's totally surreal. Absolutely. Like, very surreal. It's very weird to be like, oh, these are, I can write about things that I'm interested in. And it's really nice, actually, because I don't, you know, it's like I kind of like have like interest ADD. Like, if I ever just had to concentrate on one specific thing forever, it would just, I don't think I could do it. And you know, like all the other things, I feel like all the other things that you're interested in your life always inform each other and make the way you talk about those other things more interesting, you know? So in that sense, yeah, it's really cool. And it is totally surreal to be like, oh, I wrote like something about Marvel's Civil War, like plans to adapt the comic book series to the movies, you know, like, that's weird.
Do you think Civil War is going to work?
I think it's a good, I actually think as a framework, you know, it's like, as a story in the comics, it was disappointing, but I think the ambition was really, it was really interesting. They could have done a lot more with it. But I really liked the story anyway. That said, I think as a framework, it really can work. And it's like, and it's the most natural way to kind of, like, offload some of the older actors and characters who are coming to the end of their contracts or not interested in doing, like, another 9 movies, you know?
Right,
and
right.
And it's a natural way also to bring in, you know, you bring in Doctor Strange and Ant-Man and whoever else, like, that they're going to do in the future, and it's a perfect way to kind of, like, it's a perfect crossroads to do that.
Right.
If it works, if it comes off.
It's just a really ambitious thing to do. And I think it's like, it's really interesting how maybe what, like 10 years ago, maybe a little bit less, like definitely wouldn't have thought this possible, this huge, like arcing thing, like these comic book companies and both DC and Marvel having phases, even like planned out arcs. Like, before it was just like, okay, we're going to have a Spider-Man trilogy. And then we don't really know what past that. But now it's like, I mean, we are planned to like 2026 or whatever.
It is amazing that they've really kind of exported their whole kind of like universal structure into the movies. And now television, you know, as well, with, you know, the Arrow and their Shield, and there's like Marvel's doing Daredevil and on Netflix. So it's like, it's really interesting, and they inform each other in a way, because like if you look at like New 52 or the way Marvel is doing, they're not like rebooting the universe like every, you know, 2 years or whatever. they're not hard rebooting, but they're doing it almost like seasons where it's like, okay, Marvel Now is like season to season, whereas like this Marvel Now is like the end of an arc, and you can jump in, and it kind of gives you this like hard delineation, oh, this is where I can jump in, right at the beginning of the story and kind of know what's going on. So, and that to me is kind of like built off of, you know, television and movies and stuff, the way those are structured. So it is interesting the way comic books are like informing the culture right now.
And I wonder if they kind of learned from their successes in TV and movies and then implemented that in the comics. Like you were saying, for like now, they didn't retcon the entire universe. They just like let you know when a good jumping point was.
Right.
So it didn't alienate the old fans, but it was also accessible to new fans as well.
Yeah, it's like, and I've heard, you know, various interviews with like, you know, like Bendis at Brevoort, where they've said, yeah, it's like we're thinking like it's like seasons of a television show, and it's that kind of thing where you're like, well, why didn't anybody do this before? Because that's smart. It's actually really smart, you know, because it's been almost impossible in the past to just be like, when can I come in and kind of know what's going on? I remember when I first got into comic books, that was a thing. It's like you kind of just have to buy it. You just have to buy one. And then
just jump in and like maybe you'll catch up.
Right, and just try and keep like treading water until you understand where you are. And that can take a little while. And invariably you end up like buying backwards, like before you jumped in. But yeah, it's really a smart idea that is way past due for the comics industry.
Have you been reading Access yet?
I'm not caught up. I'm like 4 weeks behind in everything. I need to get into it. I actually have it, but I haven't read it.
It's pretty typical Remender so far.
So that's, are you saying that in a good way or a bad way or like a...
It's both. Like, I like some things about Remender. I think he carries his arcs on for like a lot longer than they need to be.
The knock on Remender is always going to be that he's great with the bit players when he elevates them to like star status, you know, in his arcs. And he falters when it's like, when he has to do big guys, big characters, you know, Captain America, Scarlet Witch or whatever. He has to like, that's where he kind of like falters. Would you say that is accurate for us?
Yeah, I think so. I also think he does better when it's a smaller team.
Right.
Like his X-Force, even though I thought it carried on too long, like he had unique characters in there, and also it didn't really bleed into X-Men and the other X-Books too much. It was kind of self-contained. You know, he did a great job with Phantom X, I thought.
I don't think even arguably that's the best Phantom X ever. That's the best Phantom X like story that, you know.
Oh yeah, easily.
That has ever been in the comics.
Yeah, Spurrier's doing a good job with him on, you know, on his run, but still, like, it's obviously not the same. But like when he first started Uncanny Avengers, like I was really excited about the prospect of that. But he got a bit too prosy. Like, remember when we were talking before, like, Hickman, who does, you know, Avengers and whatnot? Hickman writes Hickman. Like, he doesn't really write characters. Like, Remender writes Remender in the same way.
I mean, you could argue every kind of comic book writer, every writer really does that to an extent. But I think that, and it's really just, like, how you, do you like that style? Like, some people really love Hickman, you know. I like Hickman, he's fine, but he definitely just writes Hickman.
Yeah.
You're like weird, like, spacey Hickman, where he's remembered that same kind of, like, I don't even know what he'd call it, but it's the same thing, and Bendis is very similar, where it's, like, very jokey, you know, everything he does. But, so in that sense, like, Remender's never been quite for me, even though I love his X-Force. I thought that was great.
Yeah. I don't know, like, I like some of his stuff, but for the most part, I just kind of, like, it's not my favorite. I guess is my thing. Like I've got, you know, I think everybody has their guys. Like it's the same for, you know, whether it's basketball writing, whether it's just general sports writing or any type of, like, everybody has their guys. Like for a comic books for me, it's like, you know, it's Spurrier, Wade, a few other guys that, you know, I'll read anything by them. When it comes to like sports writing, like anything Brian Phillips reads, I'm, you know, obviously,
oh, yeah,
or anything he writes, like I'll read it instantly. I'll drop whatever I'm doing. Like there are a lot
he's
of guys
guy.
Like that.
Yeah. He's the guy.
Yeah. Basically. But yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's obviously the style that you prefer, but unlike with sports writing or like other types of writing, also like the art in a comic can make or break a book so easily.
It's true. There's plenty of books that I've been like, I can't read this because it just looks terrible. Or it just looks, you know, the style is like something that I don't particularly enjoy. I mean, there's many, many, many times that I've done that. And maybe the writing is fantastic, you know, but I'd just be like, no.
Yeah, because you can't get engaged that way. Like, the writing's only going to take it so far.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's half the storytelling, really. Yeah.
Now we're going to, you know, since we went off of that long tangent about comics, which is great. I was hoping we were going to do that. Is there a piece that you've always wanted to write that you just haven't yet, or that you just haven't had the opportunity to do yet, whether that's, you know, sports or that's writing about comics or, you know, just anything that's just that one story that really gets you?
Emotionally
or just like... In terms of your interest, like, shit,
the
that would be a
story,
cool story to tell.
The one story that I've been pursuing, like, for months, but haven't been able to get anybody to talk about it because I think there's some, like, I guess there's some bad feelings or something, but back in, like, around 2006, 2007, Gilbert Arenas sponsored Final Boss, which is a Halo, MLG competitive Halo team. And, like, he would, like, sit behind them while they played, like, at tournaments and, like, give them water and shit. And Halo, I mean, he was apparently, like, a pretty, like, very into playing the game. And, like, I wanted to try that so I could track down, like, some former members of the team or, like, try to get them to talk about it. I tried to, like, get Gilbert doesn't really have an agent anymore. And it was, like, it's been impossible. Nobody wants to talk about it.
It just hasn't happened? Like,
no one wants to talk about it. No one wants to talk about the time that Gilbert Arenas, like, sponsored their Halo team.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe you got to, like, talk with, like, Gordon Hayward's kind of, like, the gamer guy among the weird guys.
That's another one that I want to, like, I want to fuck Gordon Hayward up in the universe. I will fuck him up. No, League of Legends I've never played in my life, although I have watched people play it, so he would destroy me in that. I'm pretty sure I could take Gordon Hayward console-wise, but League of Legends, forget it. He'll fucking destroy me.
All right, well, man, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks.